a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd.
And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3588 of the Survival Podcast. Today will be the only new show of this week going into Thanksgiving week. We will have, we'll have a show tomorrow on how to cook the perfect turkey. And I'm going to, even though that show's really old, it's still really accurate with Chef Keith Snow. First time we had him on to talk about Thanksgiving, but I'll be putting some new content into that on some things that I do with my turkey now that I didn't know back then that I like even better. So you'll be able to use everything Chef Keith talks about. But you'll also be able to maybe change your brining strategy a little bit and some other cool things. Anyway, then Wednesday, we are going to have the survivalist view of Thanksgiving. This is kind of like my Charlie Brown show. I have like two of those, right? I have like, yeah, you watch the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving every year, even when you're an adult, whether you have kids or not, and then the Charlie Brown Christmas special. So I have a Christmas special and a Thanksgiving special that I always end the week with of those two holidays. So the Thanksgiving one will come around. And we've been doing that since 2008 when I started. I've been rerunning it. And I did remaster that one, so it is a little bit better audio quality than the original. If you want the scratchy road noise traditional one, there'll be a link when that show comes out on Wednesday where you can go listen to it in the old school manner if that's what you want to do. But today we're going to talk about redesigning education from scratch. And I'd like to give credit to where this idea was seated, but I just don't remember. I watched some sort of user-created documentary years ago, more than 10 years. And they were talking about how society runs. And the narrator said something to the effect of, if we were designing society from scratch today, if we were going to create an economic system, a social system, everything that we have in the world today, but we didn't have anything, but we had modern technology. I don't know how the hell that would happen, but his point was, one thing we can probably all agree on, we wouldn't design what we have. And therefore, maybe we should think about redesigning. Now, redesigning society is not something I'm really down with when it comes to this like top-down approach, because that basically means other people making decisions for you. The education system, though, as I've been doing a lot of work over the years in encouraging homeschooling, distance learning, alternative education, creating my own courses, this is something I keep coming back to, that what we're doing isn't working. It isn't working. And so I got this kind of bee in my head going at me for like past couple weeks here leading up to this and thinking, if we had to design a public education system, both, you know, K through 12 plus a university system, and we had all the tech we had today, would we design what we have? When we jump into it, I'm going to show you a poll that I ran on X that will decidedly show you that literally nobody says, yeah, we would design what we have, or we would even design it with a few tweaks. Like, just make what we have better or tweak a few things. No, like radical overhaul was the overwhelming thing that I got from this X poll that I did. And I'll show you the results again in just a few moments. And I started thinking, well, then why is everybody trying to fix it? Why are we trying to fix what we have? When everybody's in agreement, like if this was a house, then what it needs is a match or a bulldozer, dynamite, or a combination thereof. Well, you don't, like, there's a certain point where you look at a building and you go, yeah, this is a nice location, but this building's had it. It's done. There's no more retrofitting. There's no more upgrading. It's time to tear it down and start with a brand new building. That's the education system, K to 12, and your university, trade schools, tech schools, all of it, in my opinion. And apparently, your opinion, too. And when I break it down today, I think you'll probably agree with that. Now, before we get into it, let's hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor day number one today is Anton's Land of Biltong. Guys, you want to try this stuff if you haven't. My buddy Tim, who helped with the audiovisual stuff and did a great job helping my grandson learn about this equipment, because our buddy Aaron, who usually does that for us, was not available for the full workshop. He lives kind of near where Anton's actual real world shop is. And he said, I can't drive by there without going in and having $60 to $100 come out of my pocket because the stuff's so damn good. Especially the Drew Horse sausages. Those things, I mean, they're off the hook good. So's the Biltong. So's everything. And so check out Anton's Land of Biltong today. And remember, MSB members, you get a discount on Biltong. I don't know if there's another discount program in the world that gets you a discount on Biltong, but I have one. So if you're not an MSB member, you might find that it pays for itself just by having that. Next up today is the Wealthsteading Podcast with John Pugliano. John has been working with us here at the Survival Podcast since I first met him in Salt Lake City in 2010. That's 14 years. He is a really good dude. He's also not just a financial analyst and financial manager. He is also a prepper. He's got a ham radio license. He does the food storage thing. He's got the gardens, the homesteading thing, all of it going on. Plus, he's really good with investment management. He has a podcast called The Wealthsteading Podcast. Comes out about once every week or 2 weeks. Highlights of what's going on, what he's doing with his clients, and what you should be doing with your money and a better understanding of the financial world. It all awaits you. All you got to do is check out wealthsteading.com. With that, let's go ahead and get into this. Let's start off with the X poll that I ran when I remembered that documentary that I mentioned at the beginning where somebody said if we were redesigning society today, one thing we can probably all agree on is we wouldn't design what we have. And I started like just thinking about how does that apply to education? And I was like, I bet you most people feel that way about the education system more than society, because society has a lot of latitude. We all can carve out our own little niches in it. But when it comes to the education system, most of the people in the world are forced through compulsory education, or they live in a place where they're lucky if they can get one at all in some of the third world countries. So this is kind of like a have to. Like, one way or another, you have to educate your children and you have to educate yourself. And most people are going to default to what is. But yet, I was like, I really don't think anybody likes it. But maybe I'm wrong. So I put out a poll. I only ran it for a couple hours. I should have ran it for a couple days. But I think it was pretty overwhelming anyway. This is what I said in the poll. I'm opposed to government education. Most of you call it public education. But if we're to have it, I say it's completely wrong. So if we didn't have it today and we're making it from scratch, which of these is the closest to your view if we were starting from zero? As is, just better run. 0%. Not a single person said make it like it is, just make it better, right? Just run it more efficiently. Nope. Similar, but with a few tweaks. Like, can we just tweak a few things, add some programs, take away some programs, and make it better? 0%. So the entire idea that we would even fix what we have, nobody, not one person in this poll, which again is a small sample size, but you know, it's over 100. It's probably a pretty good, you know, maybe those numbers could be 1 or 2% if you went broad with them. If you ask teachers, it's probably more because they, especially young teachers, but in the end, it was nobody. About 50% the same. 12% of people, 12.2% of people said about 50% the same, like radical overhaul, but half of it. And basically keep the structure, I guess, is how people read that. And then I said, radical change using new technology. 87.8%, almost 88% of people said the whole thing is just wrong the way that it is. And it just needs to completely be revamped. Okay, so that's where I'm coming from today. Like, we shouldn't even be talking about fixing something when 80, 90% of people are like, blow it up. Like, this is a building that every single person, every structural engineer, every architect, every remodel person looks at it and, you know, 8 out of 10 say, knock it down, blow it up, get rid of it. And then, you know, like 10% of people, 12% of people say, well, like, take it to the foundation and then you rebuild it from the foundation. And nobody's like, yeah, just fix it. Nobody. You can't find anybody except maybe one lunatic that says this building is worth fixing. So what do you do with a building like that? You get rid of it. You start over, right? Or you go build a completely new building somewhere else. You just let it rot to the ground. But you don't try to fix something that's beyond repair that everybody who's informed at all looks at and goes, this isn't worth fixing anymore. It's the car. It's the car that you put money into and money into and money into and money into. And you look at it and you go, to make this thing run again, I'm going to spend $5,000 on it. And when I get done spending $5,000 on it, it's going to be worth $4,000. You only fix that car if you have no other viable alternative. Because it doesn't make sense to put more money into a thing than it's worth when you get done putting the money into the thing. You're better off going and buying something with that money that's worth what you paid, okay? That's where we're at with education. Unfortunately, this is a car or a building that the government says you must keep. But I think that we're going to have a place soon where we have the opportunity to kind of spring this trap. And it's going to start, believe it or not, with college. And so one of the other things that kicked me into this subject and kind of resurrected this idea in my head is one of Trump's plans. And I don't actually think it's Trump's plan. I think it's the government's plan. And I think there's people that can see that something needs to be done here. And so that's why I think it'll actually get done. And that is to have a free, government-sponsored, online college system. Now, I know what you're thinking. Jack, you hate the government. You shouldn't trust. I don't trust anything. But I'm also a realist, and I know that if the government comes out with an online university and says this qualifies as a college education and it must be accepted as such, that once that's done, people are going to use it, and they're going to use it a lot. And it's going to give us a great opportunity to do two things. One, to harness it, because it will be a good education if the student makes it a good education. Two, I think there's a peripheral opportunity here for entrepreneurs. And that'll be the last part of the show that I'll talk about today, where we can be designing things that kind of work like a makerspace. But when students aren't being extorted for $20,000 or $30,000 a year for college, when they can go for free $100 to $200 for a membership at kind of a community center designed for students, that's cheap. That's, I mean, you can work a job at Walmart and afford that, especially if you're a young person going to college and still living at home. That's not even a sweat, right? That's one night out on a weekend to gain all the things that we'll talk about when we get to that. So I think if we can do that, you can prove the model. Once you can prove the model, well, if it's good enough for people who are getting degrees, why isn't it good enough for people who want to be homeschooled or community schooled or all of these things that we talk about? I see this as a way to back this into. And I'm not going to deal with this stuff right here. Okay. If you want to point out that there will be flaws in any system by the government, you're going to be correct. But you know what? 2 + 2 = 4. And it doesn't matter where you learn it from. And it doesn't matter if there's, because there will be flaws in any education. So if you want to nitpick this, then you're wasting my time today. And I'm going to ignore you. And I'm not trying to be mean to Builder of Castles. He's a good dude and all. But there are people that no matter how good something is, they'll look for the 1 or 2% or the 10% that's fucked up. And they'll just basically shit on the whole thing. That's why I did my show. That I did before the election saying, I don't vote. I don't care if you do or not. But if you're going to vote, vote orange. And I'm watching all the hatred of the orange man now. And it's just so bizarre to see all these people out of the libertarian community, especially. Like I said, libertarians have gone from autistic to full retard. Okay. Just all this hatred over stupid shit. Like, yeah, Sebastian Gorka, terrible pick. I don't care. I don't think he'll get approved. I think it's a horrible cabinet pick. Like, the guy's a lunatic. I agree. But all I'm telling you is if you had cackles running shit, everything would be 100 times worse. And you can't at least celebrate the good in something, even if there's bad in it. And it's pathetic. And you guys need to stop it, because the reason I even took this time to rant a little bit on this comment, if you keep doing this, you will never accomplish a fucking thing toward moving the ball forward, because you're so obsessed with, but this will be a problem. Instead of saying, how can I take this opportunity and do something with it? So I want to take it way beyond that. That's just a genesis. And when I say good education, I mean you will be able to do math. You will know some shit about history. And I believe in something that diverse, people will be able to pick and choose what they learn. It absolutely will. And Hunter got it. Hunter got it. You can't do worse. It won't be worse than it is. So if we're going to even acknowledge that the current system does anything, okay, then whatever we design next, can't be worse. It will be better. I guarantee it. So let's start talking about it. So again, if we were starting no public education, we just didn't have it. We didn't have this installed base of giant corporations that make a fortune on textbooks, that make a fortune selling prison quality food for lunches into our school system. We didn't have this entire government monopoly of sucking property taxes to fund it. And then saying, but without us, how would you have schools? More roads and more schools, right? Like, we didn't have any of that shit today. And we decided, you know what? Whatever we're doing, whatever we did have, we're not making sure enough people get an education. So it'd be great if we could make sure that every single child in this country gets an education, even if it's not perfect. They can add, they can subtract, they can multiply, they can divide. They know basic science, they know basic history, right? And they know how to function and how to read and write and do research. Like, we need to at least have that, right? Okay? Would we build what we have? And again, when I asked you guys on X anyway, the overwhelming answer is not just no, but hell the fuck no. Like, nothing like what we have at all. 87, call it 89, 88%, whatever it was, said just completely different. And even the few people that were like, well, there's maybe something we can salvage from this, were only like about 50% of it. And 50% of a change of a system is a radical overhaul. So we all agree with that. So what could we do differently? Here's just some ideas I have. And this is all in the show notes. It's a big outline, it's really long. I'm going to go quick through it so we're not having a super long show today, though. And I am not saying this is what we should do. I'm saying this is my stab at how this could be done. Plenty of stuff could be added or subtracted from it. And the whole point would be that if you have a lot of people attacking it from different vectors, somebody's going to have the best system that's going to become the most popular, and maybe a number two and a number three. So here's what I think. One, we could start personalizing learning paths. I do think that every person should be able to do their basic math skills up to about like an algebra one level. And I think that's about enough for mathematics, unless there's a reason for you to go forward with it. And so if you can do basic algebra, you can make spreadsheets, you can work out business plans, you can do just about everything. If you want to go trig, calc, whatever, that's all fine. But I think that we need this core. What is science? How does science work? What is the scientific method? Those types of things, basic history, like just a basic understanding of here we are, this is where we are, and here's how we got here. And then you can, again, people can go as deep as they want to in any of these individual subjects. But what I'd like to do is allow students to start specializing earlier in areas where they show aptitude. Think about someone like, I have a niece. She just got out of cosmetology school. She's landed a hell of a first job with a woman that connected to us because she does like all the women in my family's hair and my nephew's hair because he's like that. He wants his hair all foo-foo and stuff. Really high end. I mean, the girl she's working for has clients who have done things like flown her to Acapulco to do everybody's hair for a wedding. It's that level. Okay. This girl has known this is what she's wanted to do since she was about 12, 13 years old. She's like 19 now. Why in the hell does she need all this other crap if that's really what she has aptitude for? What she should have been taking were things like business courses and business law courses and accounting and basic bookkeeping. So eventually, if she's running her own salon instead of just like, you know, working at ClipNet or whatever and just making, you know, doing $8 haircuts, she actually wants to be really good and really big time on her own at some point. Those business courses are also transferable to anything else. There's so much that could be done with a person like that. There was no way in hell that I was ever going to go into like a engineering, some kind of STEM course or whatever. I just didn't want to do it. It wasn't that I couldn't. So a lot of the shit that I was forced to learn was never going to be used. And since I knew I was never going to use it, I was a difficult student because I didn't give a shit. But I did great in like advanced science courses that I just found interesting, even if I wasn't going to use them. Right. But I had a, like, basically, by the time I was a senior, the whole idea that you could graduate early, they shit canned it. They wanted your ass in seat. That was the beginning of the time when administrators started seeing the ass in the seat is the key to the funds. And if you let the student graduate early instead of getting pat on the back for it, they took away money. So they took away the ability to do that. So I ended up like the second half of actually almost my entire senior year in high school with like almost nothing I had to do. I think I had one English credit left and I think a half a science credit. And so I took like a buttload of science courses that were half year courses for the diversity in it. And I enjoyed it. So why can't students begin to special? Because it's what you're going to do anyway. It's what you're going to like all this shit. Go to college. Well, if you're going to college with any kind of brain behind the decision, there should be a major, and that's where you're headed. So we should be letting students begin to specialize earlier. We need blended learning models that combine distance learning with in-person mentorship and practical sessions for hands-on experiences. And I'll save that a little bit because I have some ideas about how to make that happen and self-fund it in a bit. But we really do at some point need students to be able to get together to co-learn. And this is what gets missed. Everybody in the education system today is so concerned about making sure Timmy or Tammy or Tommy, right, learns all the things that they silo them and they have to do everything alone. They have very few group projects. Nothing in the world works that way unless you're a solopreneur like me. And even me, I'm reaching out to people all the time to outtask, outsource, et cetera, right? I couldn't run this show the way that I do without Tom, for instance, and having him as kind of my web admin guy. So even I, as a solopreneur, I'm reaching out to others. But most of you, if you have a job, you know this, like, you don't work alone. If you have any kind of job that's management, problem-solving oriented, engineering, anything like that, that involves more than just I sit here and answer phones and tell people to turn it on and turn it off back again and see if the router comes up. If you have anything beyond that, you work with other people all the time. But the entire education system has been on testing people individually. So we need collaboration. And we should be using things like virtual reality for immersive learning experiences, especially in things like history and science and engineering. I mean, we're at a point now, we already have virtual reality technology. But imagine being able to have a conversation when you're learning about the Declaration of Independence with Thomas Jefferson and you're actually talking to something that appears to be like you're talking like this close to Star Trek holodeck shit. We're that close already. We're that close to having a holodeck. Not quite, but close enough to make the learning experience more immersive. And we still have students paying for freaking books because they got a scratch on the cover. This is asinine. Look at what the cost of books is for your first year of college. And tell me this makes any sense in a world we can digitize stuff, but we'll get to that. We need to decentralize educational resources. That's where this goes next. And I believe that the solution to almost every problem is some form or some level of decentralization. When everything is controlled at a single point, this is the very definition of monopoly. And that's why you can tell a parent, you owe us $65 for a five-year-old textbook because your kid didn't put a jacket on it and two pages fell out of it. And they'll pay the bill because you have that centralized control. So what we need to do is, for instance, replace our traditional textbooks with open source, updatable digital content. Think of it like Wikipedia without the woke mind virus and dating it. So if you have a science textbook, it would be great that you could, and the one thing I like about Wikipedia is you can see what was there and what is there now in the revisions. I wouldn't want to lose that with something like that. But I would want a student to go, well, why did this change? What did it used to say? And then question it and then pick upon it and see, is this really correct? That's critical thinking. But why are we still using freaking printed textbooks in 2024? Why does that even exist? And I'll tell you why. Because there's people that make a fuck ton of money doing it, and they've clawed into the system, and they ain't about to let it go easily. It will have to be taken from them. But if you create this, and any kind of good online university is going to have this, there is no sense. And you could even say, like, if somebody has a really great book, digitize it and give them a royalty, $2 per student that uses it. I'm not opposed to people making money. I don't care if it's $5. I don't care if it's $10. Especially if it's optional that you use the book. But this idea that we can have professors using this as a retirement campaign, because that's what a retirement account is, what it is. They get their book, specced in, and they sell this really expensive book for the rest of their lives. And even when it's outdated, people still end up having to buy it. So we need that. We also need to incorporate global knowledge repositories and start using the other tools that are already there for education. Things like Khan Academy, right? Or Excellus, even though it's a paid program. Like, a lot of what I'm going to talk about with the spaces could be duplicated for children with something like the Excellus program, or like Coursa, or something like that. There's a lot of things already there that have a tremendous amount of information already accessible, either for free at a very low cost. And then companies like Excellus, they already license their content to public education schools. There's over 6,000 public schools currently using Excellus programs, and their teachers sit there while shit plays and do nothing except babysit the classroom on a full teacher's salary, by the way, where they get paid full time on working 180 days a year, which you don't get that. And I'm not picking on teachers. I'm just saying this is the system we built. We built this system over time, cobbled together, and then we got to a point where it got big enough that whenever a problem came up, well, we'll just either ignore it or pretend we're fixing it. But above all, it must be defended as the system that it is. We need to get away from that. And I think this is a good way to do that. Again, using these programs like Khan, Excellus, Coursa, and then God, slipping for me right now. I use this for my kids, my grandkids all the time. OutSchool. OutSchool is another, because you can individually get tutoring through OutSchool. So like, if my grandson is struggling with math, we know that once you have a problem with math, even if you get by every level, it gets harder because of this thing you're missing. So we don't let that happen. Like, well, I got a C. That's not good enough. So we'll get him a tutor. We'll pause his learning. He'll spend 2 or 3 days talking with that tutor. We'll have him redo that lesson. Once he's aced it, now we move on. That level of flexibility we need to build into things, and using these resources allows for that. But what if somebody can't afford it? Then they can't afford it. Then they can't afford it. You know what? There's a lot of shit I would like. I'd like an 800-acre hunting reserve for myself that I never had to leave. I don't have the money, so I don't get one. If you do, you get one. That's life, you know? It's called actually having an incentive to do more so you can have more, like meritocracy or what have you. We also need to move into more of a skill-based credentialing. So think about this. If you're interviewing for a job with me, back when I used to be in that world, and I don't care if it's college or high school or whatever, and somewhere on your resume cover letter it says you're a 4.0 student. Do you know how much I give a fuck? Not at all. Not at all. Now, if I'm hiring you as a graphics designer and you went to the Graphic Design Institute and you have a 4.0 from there, now I care, because your training is directly applicable to what you do. But in general, having a 4.0 high school GPA doesn't mean anything to me. And here's the secret. For just about anybody that's going to hire your fucking ass, they don't give a shit either. Now, college might, because you're likely to graduate, and that means you stay there and you rack up the full tuition bill. They care. The person hiring you cares what you can do and how much they need to invest in you to make you able to do what they need you to do eventually, and what your long-term future with them is. It has nothing to do with your grade point average. Because I can have two students. One took all the easiest courses known to man that they could take at their high school with a 4.0, and the other one was like in AP classes and shit like that. And you'd think, well, then you want the one that took the more difficult course of study. Well, if I'm looking for somebody to do chemistry, maybe I do. But if I'm looking for somebody to manage a tire shop, I'm back to, I don't give a shit about your grades. I care about what you can do. So we need to start credentialing students. In other words, saying, this person has mastered these skills. So like a mastery program. In fact, you might even have something like digital badges, something that is portable that you can't ever have taken away from you. Less a certification, which is like, you know, you go to licensing board, CE credits, all that. But this person did this thing, and you actually have a real permanent record. You might even use something like blockchain technology to make that verifiable, secure, but public. I don't know if blockchain's right for that. There used to be a lot of use cases I had for blockchain. I'm not so sure about most of them anymore. They're mostly scams designed to make people think this next alt was going to be, you know, making them rich and buying their 800-acre hunting preserve or whatever it is that they wanted. But I think that we definitely can create some sort of system where if you come to me and say, I have mastery in these five things, I can verify that in a way that I know when I look at it, it's legitimate and you can't alter it, right? You can't just go in and tick the boxes for yourself or have somebody hack the system. Something very secure, very, very secure, and yet publicly accessible, or at least publicly accessible with some kind of passcode. So I would say, here's my student number and here's my, you know, here's my view, instead of being able to go in and alter my data or in some way, like what classes I'm enrolled or getting kind of like personal data. It would just simply be the publicly viewable part. And blockchain might be actually really good for that. And, you know, to dig up an old shitcoin, even something like Algorand, very light, very fast, very cheap, and very secure from a standpoint of not being alterable, but at the other side of it, very able to be viewed by anybody with the right access information to it. But something like that. We also really need to work hard on community and peer-based learning. Like I said earlier, there's no job that you have of any significance where you do everything yourself. There's no job that you have of any significance in the world today that when there's a problem, you're the only one working on. There's always teams. There's always collaboration. And even if you are a one-man show in your company, so you are in a company, there are more people, but you're the social media expert or whatever. When you don't know how to do something, you go to the internet, you go reach out to people you know. And if you have a Rolodex, which everybody should, and this would be a good way to start establishing that early, by the way, and you know the one, like if you had a question about podcasting and I'm your personal friend, you're probably going to ask me. And I'm probably going to have a pretty good answer. So we need to start conditioning people to think this way when they're young, not teach them they have to do everything alone, then throw them into the pool when they get a job and say, work with these 10 other people. Because that's what so much of the education system is right now. So we need to have this kind of peer collaboration, forums, group projects, student centers, and I'll save the student center for later because I have a really kind of an ambitious plan on something like that. We also need to be utilizing popular online platforms for community-driven knowledge sharing. Well, that would be Slack or something like that. I don't even know. But that's what everybody's using in workplaces, right? Johnny, turn that off. Don't look at it. You'll get the answer that way. Well, especially if it's from another. I actually believe that if all a person is doing is cutting and pasting answers out of ChatGPT, they may not learn anything. But if you actually give me a problem, okay, and I really have no idea how to fix the problem. And I contact Bill, and Bill says, well, let me tell you about this. And then I go so far with Bill, and then I have to call Tammy. And I get in touch with Tammy, and Tammy jumps in our group, and she said, and then I actually resolve the problem. I'm probably 100 times more likely to remember it than if I fumbled through it myself. Actually, it reinforces the knowledge. By having to work through a process with other people, it makes you more adept, and in the future, you won't need them for that thing. And hopefully, you're developing where they can contact you, and you can help them get through it. So we should be using these online platforms right now because it's what work groups are already doing. But we isolate people in these silos. It's ridiculous. We need to be emphasizing more life skills. I've done whole shows on this. I'll go quick here. Just two bullet points on it. But we need to be like integrating things like financial literacy, critical thinking, and problem solving as core subjects. I learned nothing about problem solving in school. Nothing. Now, I solved my own problems when they came up, but there wasn't anything that was like, today we're going to discuss problem solving methodology, aka troubleshooting. I never got a course in that, so I joined the Army. Then the whole thing was about troubleshooting and using a manual and testing a system from one end to the other, find the fault, take corrective action. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the average 14-year-old can follow that line of thinking. See, this is what you have to start asking yourself, like, why don't we do this? The purpose of the system is what it does. You start doing that in a flawed system like our educational system. You start teaching critical thinking and problem-solving ability, and your students start looking around and going, what's my biggest problem right now? This place that I'm stuck in. These classes that are boring. These teachers that aren't any good at their job. Being bullied by my contemporaries or whatever it is. And they go, wait a minute. So how would we fix this? And they start tearing it down from the inside. Of course they don't do that. You know, they don't let the math teachers anywhere near the budget. Yeah. I'm telling you, they don't let math teachers don't get to see the fiscal budget for the school that they work at. Because they start looking at some numbers and going, wait a minute, X does not equal what you say X equals. There's some bullshit going on here. Like, you might see the service level stuff, but they don't get to see what the superintendent sees. So they are never going to do this unless we wrest it away from them and do it ourselves. We also need to focus on more interdisciplinary education so we get a rounded environment. So, like I said, we do want students to be able to specialize, but we should, like, everybody should have some level of, like, I guess you would call it electives, where we're able to actually explore things beyond the thing that is going to be like our profession, because we might determine at some point this profession that I'm pursuing, yeah, I don't really want to do it. And having that more rounded approach to the world lets you figure out how you want to segue out of that. I had a good friend of mine I was in the Army with. He was a roommate when I moved to Texas originally. He married a woman named Deborah. She was going to school to be an architect. And, I mean, I was young. I was in my early 20s. And I picked up on it right away and went, this isn't going to work. Because when I started talking to her, she's a lovely person, mind you. But why did she go to architecture school? Because her daddy was an architect. And I'm like, I didn't say it to my buddy because I knew it was no sense in stirring shit up. But I'm like, in my head, two things are going to happen. One, this marriage will not survive. They'll be divorced within a few years and because she has daddy issues. And two, she's not going to be an architect. Well, they got divorced in about 2.5 years. And today, as far as I know, she designs closets with CAD systems for a company that does like closet organization. And I'm sure her architectural degree is helpful, but not really. And she went through all that hell and all that expense, but she was tunnel visioned on it because that was the thing that you do because that's what daddy did. And I think the more you get outside of that tunnel, the more you realize how many things there are to do, how many things you can do. I think a lot of people, when they're 18 years old, 19 years old, 15 years old, whatever, they're getting ready to go to college or think about applying, they literally look at college majors and say those are the jobs. Most college majors are not jobs. If you have a degree in, you know, a business administration degree, you're not going to be a business administrator. There's 100 different things you could do with that. We need to get people looking more into the career side of life and less about the educational side of life so that they can then tailor their education to the career rather than pick an educational path because this one makes a lot of money or because this one's easy. Neither of those are really highly motivational for people in that type of situation long term, where you have to keep at it to earn that level of mastery. Okay. We also need more practical application in apprenticeship programs. I think that one thing we could be doing, especially with this model, is partnering with businesses and organizations to provide real world training and apprenticeships. There isn't a business person out there that if they can get work for free or cheap, won't take some of it. And that gives people real world experience. It's also like the greatest job interview I could ever have is to have a student come in that's going to work 2 days a week for 4 hours a day as an apprentice for free, you know, or very little money, to see how they act when they're not being driven only by money. What's their attitude? Are they excited? Do they fit the culture, et cetera? It's because anybody can train themselves to walk into a job interview and answer all the questions the right way. And then you hire them, and the person you hired ends up not being the person you interviewed. Ask me how I effing know, because I did it many, many times. Like, this person is perfect. 2 weeks in, you're like, oh, shit, what have I done? So if I can get that look and I can encourage and I can start picking people that I want to train, I want to invest in to eventually become part of my workforce, that's a win all around. That's a win for the educational institution. That's a win for the student. That's a win for the community. That's a win for the business owner. Everybody wins in that model. And right now we have a lot of models where nobody wins at all. We also need to let students learn by solving real problems. Have them create startup businesses. There's actually some colleges that are doing this with entrepreneurship programs and what have you. But see, those business-centered programs, like I hired a guy out of one of those that had a degree from somewhere up near, I can't think of the college right now, pretty good college up near Denton, Texas. Might have been UNT. And he had an entrepreneurial degree. And boy, if you wanted someone to put together a proposal to get money from a venture capitalist, this dude could do that, but actually start up a business and run it, not so much. We need to be encouraging people to create these little micro businesses, these little side hustles during their educational paradigm, because you learn so much from that. You learn so much how to build a website, how to market. When you fail, you learn more than when you succeed. Because when you fail, then it's an instant real-time feedback from a real marketplace that says your idea sucked, or the way you explained your idea sucked, or your execution on your idea sucked. Something sucked. And then if you're not a little sissy baby, you say, what did I get wrong? Was the idea wrong? And it's like, no one actually wants this thing. Well, let's not do that again. Or like, this could have worked, but my messaging was ass. Like, these are the things that kids are not learning. And when I say kids, I'm including the college level, 20-somethings. They're not learning that. What they're learning is, when professor says A, I do good. This is not how the fucking world works. It doesn't work that way at all. So we should stop pretending that it does. And I think there's a lot of things that we could be doing. Like, we have problems in this country everywhere. Everywhere. What about taking some young, motivated young people, who, one of the common things I hear out of Gen Z all the time, and millennials too, is, I want to make a difference in the world. Now, a lot of times these students, as they go into the workplace, they expect to make 80 grand a year for starting salary, doing something real and meaningful. That's not going to happen. But while they have all that motivation, and what if you said, look, we have this problem in this part of town. How do we fix it? How do we fix it? And the best schools on the planet are already doing very similar. I remember listening to one of Michael Saylor's interviews with Robert Breedlove when they did that whole like 13-part series on Bitcoin. That like the first four of them didn't even hardly use the word Bitcoin. It was, you know, history and the history of the Romans and all. And he was talking about his first day at MIT. Michael is a grad from MIT, arguably the top engineering school in the world. And so they get into this school and everybody sits down. And he's like, I realize for the first time in my life, I'm not the smartest person in the room or even close to it. I'm literally averaged out with all, because these were all top students that are sitting in this class at MIT. Professor walks in with a piece of the Challenger's space shuttle's heat tile that's damaged, sets it down, and lets the students pass around, and says, this is what it is, what went wrong? And the class looks at each other like, top student or not, they've always been in a place where the professor knows the answer, the answer's in the back of the book, whatever. Well, as they start discussing it, and the professor's like, yeah, we already thought of that. That's not what it is. No, that's not that either. No, it may have something to do with that, but it's no. And they realize a couple things. One, the professor doesn't have an answer. No one's figured out exactly what went wrong yet, number one. Number two, everybody else in that class is just as smart as they are, and they don't know either. And here's the real world now. Now you have to figure out how to solve a problem that no one else has ever actually figured out before. There is no place to check to see if you're right. You have to work through the problem. And that's why that was done. We need to be doing that on a more practical, simpler level. Again, we have a problem with this area in town. How do we fix it? This business, which has been part of this community for 50 years, is in danger of going out of business. They can't afford a business consultant. Why don't you guys that are working on developing business acumen look at their business and see how it could be recovered? Or is it recoverable at all? What is their exit strategy if it's not? How do maybe we keep the business even if ownership changes? Put this on these people. They'll do something with it. They might not be right. They might not be right. But that experience is relevant, and it's above all real. Do you know why I hated math in school? Because I don't give a fuck what X is. I don't care. You're gonna teach me how to do a formula. Then you give me 100 problems using that same formula, and I got to do it over and over and over and over again. Once I do it once and I know how to do it, I don't give a fuck. Because I don't care what X is. Now, if X is how much money I'm going to make, I care. If X is how many years it is until my retirement, I care. If X is a solution that will save somebody's business, I care. If X is an arbitrary number that I'm not even going to think about again for the rest of my life, I don't give a shit. And that's true in so much of education today. How many of you, tell it? Just put me in the live chat if it was you, at points in your education, whether high school or beyond, thought, I don't care about this because it doesn't matter. It's not real, right? It's not real. That motherfucking education is not real, right? No matter if you can believe it or not believe it, that education is not real. It doesn't matter because there's no real light at the end of that tunnel. There's no definitive, because I got this right, now something else can be done. All it means is I get to go to the next grade and answer more bullshit. So if we actually integrate real world outcome into problem solving, maybe our students would actually get excited about solving problems because they're not solving this arbitrary random string of characters. And there's a place for that. Like I said, basic math, et cetera, everybody should learn to do that. But instead of getting me coming in, that is a problem that we've done nothing about addressing because it can't be addressed in the system we have. It has to be completely overhauled. How would you address that problem right now? Teachers, I know I pick on like some of their crybaby shit, but in the end, if you think about it, if you're a teacher and you're teaching seventh grade science, the school says, here's your curriculum, stay on a timeline. You don't have any real time to do shit like this. You have to get Timmy and Tammy, who are at the bottom of the class, to at least get a fucking D and get them the hell out of your class and into the next teacher's class in eighth grade. You don't have time to do this. There is no way to do this in the system because the purpose of the system is what it does. We also need to have more parent and community involvement. And I don't mean the way the schools mean it. Schools always say, we want parents participating. What they mean is they want parents to enforce the school's rules for their student. They don't want you telling them what they're doing wrong. They don't want you collaborating. They don't want you coming in going, hey, you know, this science class is kind of boring. Maybe we could live. They don't want any of that shit, right? They want you to shut up and make your kids shut up, including up to putting them on drugs so they'll sit in their seat and do what they're told. Because the system is designed that way. There is no way to do what we're talking about in that system. It cannot be done. But if we did something like this, now what we can do is have parent local communities have a role in shaping the curriculum to make it more tailored to local needs. So if your student wants to move away, that's one thing, but you know, so many students would stay home if there was an opportunity there. What does your city, what does your county, what does your region need that it doesn't have? Do you know who knows? The fucking business owners that are there. They know what they need that they can't get. You see what I'm saying? Like, you might actually want to go a little bit stronger on the agricultural side of things if you live in rural Nebraska than if you live in Atlanta, Georgia. Or you live in a small town outside Dallas-Fort Worth that's not right in the metro mess, but it can draw from that talent pool. What do we need people coming out of school right now able to do when they come out of school so that we will hire them and we can build our businesses? That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about collaboration because, you know, like business owners, a lot of them are also, you know, parents. And then when parents talk to each other and Billy wants to go into game programming and they're like, there's no future in that. And Billy's best friend's dad runs a game production company and says, right now I'm hiring people at entry level for 85 grand a year. If they're competent, all of a sudden that discussion's over now, isn't it? But if you're going to be taking some of these pathways, where is the place that you need to live? What can be done remotely? What can't? You need to actually have this conversation going on so that because whatever you come up with, this is the big thing. And this is why the current system is just sucks. It shouldn't stay the same. It shouldn't stay the same. The curriculum should evolve across time based on the needs that exist for that student after graduation. I'm not talking about updating history books so that, you know, right now you're using a history book in school that maybe like 1980, the world stopped or something like that. So, you know, just adding 1980 to 2020. I'm not talking about that. I mean, even the method by which students learn, the requirements by which students are graded or judged, the proficiencies that they're developing. If you're not changing that, and we're not. School today isn't much different than it was when I was in high school. I've been there. I've looked. I paid attention when my kid went through school. I paid attention as my nephews and nieces came up through. It's the same shit. They have computers now. That's about it. They have computers, and they don't take typing. They take keyboarding. Yay. Woohoo. It's pretty much the same as it's been since the 1800s. It's still the Prussian model. Why are we using a model that's over 150 years old when so much – think about the world when this system was put into place. Just call it 1900. It's actually earlier. Call it 1900. No one owned a car. TVs didn't exist. There was a few cars out there, but no one owned them, right? If you take a picture from New York City in 1900, there's horses, donkeys, and horse shit all through the whole city. No one owned a car. No one owned a TV. They hadn't been invented yet. Marconi had, I think by then, just invented radio, but people weren't in general using radio. Certainly nobody had a computer or a video game or virtual reality or an internet. You see? How are we using a model for that time when if you took somebody from 1900 and froze them like Idiocracy, because that's how this feels sometimes, and had them wake up in 2024, they wouldn't even recognize the world they're in, but they would recognize school for what it is, the same template. We have to be evolving. And that should be done by communicating with parents and businesses and community members about needs and the evolving, changing nature of needs. We need to be providing tools for parents to contribute to their child's progress in meaningful ways and to measure their progress. See, Acelus has this already. My grandson and granddaughter now are spending a couple days a week with their other grandparents. This is great. Gives my wife a break. And because she retired as a school teacher, she just couldn't take it anymore. She wants the kids to go back to public school, but she can't take it anymore. Think about that for a minute. This is the level of brainwashing in our educators, right? But she's not really on board with this homeschool stuff. So she tells the kids to do their school, but she doesn't do it the way we do it. We're like, do your school, get it done so you can go be free. So because that's what we're all about. We're like, you should be able to knock out your school in 2 hours a day. And they can. If they don't fight it, if they just get on it and get it done. And that gives you the rest of the day for what other people call unschooling. I don't give a shit what you do within some parameters of basic rules of the house after your school's done. Yeah, that's fantastic. But the good part of this is when they are somewhere else and we're like, did you do your school lessons at Grandma JoJo's? Uh-huh. And you just log in to the parent account. And you no, you didn't. You did this one, but not these three. So you're going to do those plus today's when you come home. And that actually is a good problem-solving thing because we don't tell them that it's going to happen again. It just keeps happening until they snap to it and go, you know, if I want to maintain the freedom that I have, I need to have the discipline to do the work over here so that when I come back over there, I don't have to do that plus that day's work because that's exactly what they do. And if it takes them till 5 o'clock when it's time to go to mommy, so be it. You made your own bed. Now you get to lie in it. And so we need things like that where when you're talking about people that are not adults in college yet, you're still talking about kids. Parents can have immediate oversight into their child's progress and what they're working on. And what they can do to enable and empower that, because parents generally would if they knew what was going on. Parents have just outsourced everything to the school system. And I think the average person that, you know, lives in a decent area, pays high property taxes, this is how they feel. And you can understand how I'm working my ass off. I go to work before the sun comes up. And you know, sometimes at some parts of the year when it's shorter days, I come home, it's dark. I'm tired. It's all I can do to pay the bills and keep going. And I pay these fuckers thousands of dollars a year in property taxes. And so do all my neighbors. And so I went to school and basically learned what I needed to learn. I expected my kid is as well. And unless the teacher reaches out and said, Johnny's failing math, they don't worry about it. We need to create an easy way for parents to have that visibility so they can have constructive discussions with their kids And we have to get parents off of what the public school system wants you to do. This is what the public school system wants. Johnny's failing math. You yell at Johnny to try harder in math, and you push Johnny back to them, and they fix it, which they caused the problem in the first place. You know what you call a person who sends the problem back to the person that caused the problem with an expectation that they'll fix it? When they failed the first time due to incompetence, not due to being lazy, dumb. You are dumb. If you take your car to a mechanic and he makes the car worse, I can understand there's a warranty, maybe you get one more chance. But if he fucks it up twice, you stop taking your car to that mechanic. So if you're sending your teen back to the teacher who failed to teach him the first time, and maybe Johnny was trying, maybe Johnny's not lazy. Maybe since this teacher is all over the map with different levels of ability in students and can't tailor the education to the individual, she just can't teach Johnny. No, what Johnny needs, again, is 2 or 3 days, 30 minutes a day on out school. Do parents even know this? I bet they don't. Can you see a world today where your math teacher says, he needs a little bit of tutoring. There's this thing called out school. You can get professional tutoring for like $10 a session for 30-minute sessions with people that know this really well. No, because I want to protect what I have. I have to justify my existence. Most people on some level with any job feel they have to justify their existence. But when you are a bureaucrat, when you are an agent of the state, that's ramped up. And whether you want to accept this or not, folks, teachers are agents of the state. Teachers are bureaucrats. Teachers are bureaucrats. One more fucking time. Every teacher is a bureaucrat. I don't care if they want to be. I don't care if they know they are, but it's what they are. They look, smell, and act like bureaucrats. They are paid off other people's money. Their productivity is not really measured in any way. All they want to know is the Johnny and Jamie come out of the class and go to the next grade. And if they follow the rule book, no matter what the actual outcome is, they will never pay a penalty for it. And what I mean is you could have a teacher who 80% of the people that went through their class fail in life. Nothing will happen to that teacher. They might become teacher of the year for all you know. As long as they follow procedure. That's what makes them bureaucrats. And they are agents of the state. And they are government officials. And if you doubt that at all, if you doubt that's the way the law looks at them, go look up what charge is filed on any student who assaults a teacher. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be charged, because they should. You assault anybody, you should be charged. I get that. But what do you think the charge is? So if I walk up to Hunter here and just punch his ass in the mouth, and instead of fighting back, he just like says, fuck this. He calls the cops and says, Jack Spirico punched me in the mouth. I didn't do shit. And it turns out I punched him in the mouth and he didn't do anything. I wasn't defending myself. I assaulted him. I'm charged with simple assault on another person. Yeah. If he is a teacher in high school and I'm a 16-year-old kid, I am charged with, get ready for it, assault on a government official. The crime is a higher level crime because the person is a government official. Your teachers are bureaucrats. They follow procedure and they are not measured on their ability to actually produce a positive outcome, only to move the child through the seats to the next level. That's it. And that I am not shitting on them, right? I am not shitting on teachers. This is their job. I guarantee you, most of you either have or have had jobs in your life that you thought they would be a certain thing. And when you got there, eventually you fell in line and did what you were told to do by the person that signed your paycheck. And it didn't make sense to you, and it's not the way you wanted to do it, but you follow the system that you're incentivized to follow. The system is the problem, not the individuals in the system. But the individuals in the system, the longer they're in it, the more vehemently they'll defend the system that they know the flaws more than you and I do. I'm telling you, if you want to get a teacher to tell you the truth about the education system, when you talk to them about education, don't point any of the problems. Tell them how wonderful it is. Tell them how great it is that they're shaping young minds. Tell them how much you value the public education system, how much you're happy to pay even if you're not serious, like lie, how happy you are to pay your property taxes, because teachers do deserve raises. Maybe leave that one out, because they'll agree with that one, of course. But how great the system is. how it produces wonderful young minds that come out and aggressively take on tomorrow's challenges. They will shit all over, especially if they've been around for like 10 years or more. They will tell you shit that you will never hear from anybody outside the system because they're inside it and they know. And they know. We also need to get into more of a flexible schedule thing. So I just mentioned the math thing. So here's a real world example. My granddaughter has always had a little bit of trouble with math. And she's very young. She's 8 years old. And they're getting into, you know, what you have to memorize your times tables, your addition, subtraction, and division, right? And they've done the subtraction and addition, and she's got, you know, 1 through 12 memorized perfectly, and she can recite those. She's learning the multiplication. And you're learning, like, each couple days they drop, like, ones, a couple days later twos, a couple days later threes, a couple days. So you get time. Well, she got to, like, the end of the segment, and they just drop, like, 7 to 12 all in one, go. She's totally overwhelmed by it. And then they started immediately going into division before you've mastered multiplication. And, of course, division is the reverse of multiplication. So once you have your multiplication memorized, if you can just back and change it into a multiplication problem, you have the answer. So here's what we did. We just paused math. Just paused it. Like, and my daughter-in-law is like, she's going to fall behind. There is no falling behind. It's fucking homeschool. Relax. She does the other three subjects, and grandma works with her on her times tables until we have them all done. Once they're all memorized, we'll turn the math back on. Do you know how valuable it is to be able to do that? To have a flexible schedule, whether that is for something like I just said, or somebody going to college who wants to work full-time while they go to college. And we do have distance education programs now, but they're very expensive. People are paying as much to go to something like Western Governors University as they are to go to actual college. It's all a money grab. The whole thing's a money grab. And until you understand that about college, you'll never understand the problem with college. It's actually a masterful way to become multi-billionaire, right? If you're part of the system. So you go convince the government to subsidize loans so that students can get an education. And then every time you want to put a new building in or create a new wing or do something else, you just raise tuition and the students can borrow more money. And the students don't have to pay. It's like 0% down, right? Zero down and no payments for 48 months. That's how you sell education in America today, right? Come buy this couch, zero down, no payments for 48 months. The thing will be worn out and useless by the time you start making payments on it, and you'll be paying on it for 10 years. But no one thinks about that. They just think about putting their ass on the new couch. That's how they're selling education. And we need to integrate learning into everyday activities. We need to encourage curiosity outside traditional classrooms. In other words, we need to start giving students some level of credit for what they learn how to do on their own that wasn't given to them in a book, because that's how you fucking succeed. Let me ask you this, right? I'm not bragging, but I make more money than a lot of general practice doctors right now who went through hell to be like a GP, general practitioner. They have to run an office. They have to deal with medical assistants and nurses, insurance bullshit, all kinds of crap beyond just being a doctor. They can't even practice medicine the way that they really want to, but they went through like pre-med, med school, and internship at least, residency. And if they went on to be a surgeon or something, then they probably do make more than me, most of them anyway. But they went through some sort of a fellowship to get enough like hours of credit to be able to practice on their own and do a complex surgery. Okay, but there's a path to do that if you want to. Yeah, there's a way to do that. You get into school, you pass your MCATs, you do your shit, you comply, and you learn, and you study, and you come out the other end, and now you are a doctor. One of the things to remember about doctors, you know what you call the guy who graduates last in his medical school? Doctor. Just remember that. But what about podcaster? Where do I go to learn all the things I need to know, not just to put a podcast together, but to put a podcast together, make it successful, monetize it to the point where I can earn the income of a standard practice GP doctor podcasting. It's all self-taught. It's all autodidact. It's 100% because there isn't an alternative right now. You can take somebody's course and it's probably mostly bullshit. This is something you learn by actually doing it and by ramping it up over time, paying attention to what's around you, learning how to use tools and integrating that into a system. And there's, you know, a real huge marketing component to it, especially when you're brand new and you're getting out of the gate to gain traction. And I had a marketing background, but I also learned all that because I wanted a business and I built multiple little online businesses and I learned how to market them. So I took that skill set, rolled it into a big company, but then I also rolled it into this as my own thing and then walked away from that big company. Where do I go to school for that? I don't. So why aren't we encouraging self-directed learning and self-directed projects? Because they'll do more for a person, but how do we quantify it? Well, it's actually pretty easy to quantify it. This person knows how to do this shit. But how do we quantify it in a way that justifies the existence of a school system that was built on its, you know, its foundation in the 1800s? Well, you don't. You need A, B, C, D, F, right? You need to be able to tell the parents who are paying the ridiculous property taxes to live in your school district that you have really good schools because your test scores are better and more of your students go on to college even. But nobody ever asks. And so these students of yours that like 88% go to college, what percent graduate college? What percent of those who graduate college end up with a career in the field that they went to college for? You start asking questions like that, and wow, all of a sudden the really good schools argument starts to fall. I always said, when parents would tell me, we moved to this place because they have better schools. They get really mad at me, and I would simply ask a simple question, better at what? What are they better at? And they get mad. You know why they got mad? Because they didn't have if they had an answer, they would have just started rattling it off. Or sometimes they would say, well, they have better test scores. Okay, great. But how? Why do they have better test scores? What are they better at? What are they better at? Are their outcomes better for the student? Because getting into college isn't the outcome. It's the middle. The outcome is after college and the rest of their life. What's the outcome? Is the outcome better? Really mad. Funny. So let's talk. I want to go through this real quick, but I see a business model in this, especially at the collegiate level. If Orange Man drops the free online college university, because the one thing that's going to be missing is the shared student experiences. So what I want you to envision is something that looks kind of like a makerspace, right? A community support in-person center type situation. So we could have in something like that, I envision something that costs between $100 and $200. And what that would mean if we look at the budget, I did the budget here at the end, about $30,000 a month, 200 students at $150 a month. Now, I know that's money, but compared to the cost of going to college, it's stupid cheap, isn't it? If you can go into debt for $20,000 a year, you can afford, even if you went year round, what is that? It's $1,600 bucks, right? $1,800 bucks, yeah, $1,800 bucks, right? And maybe you only pay for it while you're in school. Maybe if you take your 3 months off a year, you don't pay it when you're not going. Or maybe you go year round and get done faster and get on to actually working and earning a living faster. And I think we need this because one of the really valuable things about going to college is simply the network that you become part of. My niece graduated from Texas A&M. I guarantee you, anytime she interviews for a job, if the person that's interviewing her is an A&M alumni, she's probably going to get the job. Job she has right now, it's exactly what happened. And the job became available because another alum told her that it was available, right? So having that network of people that you kind of go back with and have an affiliation with is valuable. That's why you go to Harvard or Yale. You don't go for the quality of the fucking education because it's not that much better or different. It really isn't. In fact, I would say today that many of the Ivy Leagues are probably shittier overall quality of education than like state schools like UNT or something like that. Because look what they're doing. They have students running away to safe spaces and crying about puppies and shit, you know, and using adult coloring books. How rigorous is your education at Princeton when Orange Man gets elected and they make a safe space for you to go eat milk and fucking cookies? It can't be that rigorous. I'm sorry. If you are allowed to silence a dissenting voice in an educational institution, that educational institution is dog shit. These institutions should be preparing people to exist in the real fucking world. And that means you are going to hear every day shit you disagree with. And you're either going to have to accept that some people think differently than you and decide you're right. You're going to have to investigate it and prove that they're wrong for yourself, or find out that you were wrong. That's the real fucking world. So we need the ability for people to, you know, to community together. But yet we need people to have to actually deal with their shit instead of having somebody hide it and take it for them and stuff, right? Almond milk and cookies, says Baptized in Fire. Probably was almond milk because, you know, one person's lactose intolerant. Everybody has to drink the shitty almond milk. And I still haven't figured out where the tips on an almond are to get the milk out of it anyway. But we need co-working spaces for group work and for individual study. We need quiet zones, not safe spaces. Quiet zones, which are dedicated areas for focused work or possibly test taking, because there may be some things that you want a student to show proficiency in, and you don't want them to be able to ask ChatGPT for every answer. That's called a proctoring. So if you had this, you could have paid proctors who show up, let's say, once a week or once a month or twice a month to act as proctors, and that's included in your fee. And all they basically do is make sure that you take the test you're supposed to take and you don't cheat. And now there are people who actually have certification in being a proctor. Basically, the educational institution said, yeah, this person can be trusted to be a proctor. Proctoring is a thing, but now you could make it integrated into the system. Conference rooms with like smart boards, video conferencing tools for group discussions and presentations. This is also what you're going to do when you go out in the real fucking world. If you're going to get a degree in marketing and you're going to go to work for a company that hires you to do marketing, you're going to have to sell your ideas, not just to the customer, but to your overlords, to your board of directors, or to your direct boss. And this is how this is done. So why not start using it early? Relaxation areas, couches, beanbags, cafe spots, something like that for breaks and what have you. Why? Because you have a paying customer who has a right to like a place to chill out once in a while, take a break in between sessions, or just sit down and talk to another student about some ideas and brainstorm. Technology and equipment. Obviously, you got to have high speed internet and Wi-Fi. Every hotel has that today. So that's just different. If I left it out, people are like, well, what about? Okay. So you got to have that. But maybe computers and tablets, maybe additional equipment that's there that can be used while you're there, like to have in a library, for instance. Printers and scanners. There are times when, even though everything's digital, we do need to print things out. There's times that's just helpful. I had some scheduling issues with the workshop where we had screwed up the first day's live streams, and I'm flipping tab to tab. Finally, I'm like, why are you doing this? I printed one page out, set it down, and it just made my life easier. Sometimes you need to be able to get imagery of something to somebody else, scanners, things like that. But basically a business center, like they have at a hotel. You don't need a lot of equipment because this would be seldom used, but necessary when it's there. You know, and maybe projectors, things for collaborative learning. Get your students running small workshops, promoting their own ability, developing their CV. Like, one of the most important things you can convey to an employer is, not only do I know this, I know it well enough to teach it to other people. Like, I'm telling you right now, when I used to hire people, and so when I realized that the person I was hiring not only could do the thing that I was hiring them to do, but they could teach others effectively to do the thing. Oh, yeah, they're right to the top of the callback list, right? They're getting a second interview. I might not hire them, but they're getting a second. I always interview people at least twice, usually three times. Like, people that were, like, CSR-level people twice, but, like, anybody of any kind of key position, three interviews before I would hire somebody. Even if I was dead set on hiring them in the first interview, I wanted to see them over time because, again, sometimes you hire the person and go, this isn't the person I hired. I want to see how they interacted. I would have certain people, I would drop them in the middle of a group and say, hey, help them out with this. Well, am I hired? No, this is part of your interview. I want to see how they're going to interact with teammates. So we should be encouraging that again from the beginning. Workshops and resources. We probably should have in something like this, some stuff you would think of as makerspace equipment, 3D printers, laser cutters, basic tools for engineering and design students. Because you might find then that a student that gets a membership at this that didn't think they were interested in engineering because they thought it was all math, and find out there's all types of engineering like fabrication and things like that. and that they can actually have a career that's in engineering direction, but doesn't necessarily mean an engineering degree. So even the exposure to those that are in that career path would be really, really valuable. We would also want like lab areas. There are certain like chem labs and stuff like that where people could go in and actually do real world beyond just watching a video of it online. Maybe like some art supplies and stuff like that for students in that direction, because there is a real place for art in the world. There are people that make a living as artists. They actually do, especially if you were to teach someone on that path. Well, how do I actually sell the shit after I paint it? Because this is what artists always think. Well, what I'll do is I'll make this really beautiful piece of art, and then I'll display it, and then somebody will buy it. And that's kind of like, I'm going to be a rock star, and so I'm going to go play this club in L.A., and a producer is going to find me and give me a record contract. It actually happens. It doesn't happen often. Like, there's a ton of people that make money in the music industry that you've never heard of, and they do really well. Some of you guys that have been to workshops here know I hired this guy a few times to come play here, a dude named Cole Reiser, country music artist. Really great. He will probably never sign with Capitol Records or anything like that. I just did the math. Dude's probably knocking back about 200 grand a year. He plays house parties. He plays clubs that pay him to come play and not the conventional type of club. And I don't mean anything weird either. I mean, like, he plays a place called Love and War in Texas. It's really a restaurant with live music. Gets paid really well for what he does. He's really good at what he does. And he knows how to market and sell himself. So there's all types of ways that these programs can be strengthened so people can actually pursue what they want to pursue in a way that actually can make them, you know, a living. Then instruction and support. You know, you'd want tutors and coaches. And maybe there's some on-site type of support, but that gets into too large of a staff to have enough diversification there. You'd really want to leverage things again with off-site remote tutoring. But you could build an entire network, and people would pay by the use, just like they do in ad school. But that's really geared more toward kids than what I'm talking about here. But wouldn't it be great, like, I'm struggling with insert subject here. Look, there's a list right on the screen in front of you. You just type in what you're having trouble with. There's a list of tutors and the reviews. And they're all a fixed rate because it's a negotiated fixed rate with the community center. And you click and set an appointment with it. And then that person helps you get past that. Why don't we have that in our current educational model? Because you can't do it in our current educational model. I know some of you are thinking, yes, you can. But I'm telling you, no, you can't. And the reason you can't is not a logistical problem in a pure level. And what I mean by that is, physically, yes, it could be done. Realistically, inside a system run by nothing but bureaucrats from top to bottom, that's set in stone the way it is, and everybody has to follow a procedure. And as long as you follow procedure, you get to teach for as long as you want and leave with your retirement. Guess what? As long as that's the case, you're not doing this shit. You have to get outside of that wheelhouse to be able to do this. You'd also want to have things like, again, just technical support. You would want somebody on staff that knows how all the stuff works. But you could also start to cultivate student leaders that become like experts in this thing or that thing or what have you. And if there's any kind of compensation, maybe it's a direct compensation model, how the real world works. Not everybody's provided for free, right? You're only getting a free education if Orange Man comes through with this, right? And then we want to have more networking events, mixers, guest speaker sessions, students to connect with industry professionals. You know, a career day in school, they bring all these people in with booths and they try to, like, the military tells you why you should join the Marine Corps or whatever. What if you just actually had once a week an event that was kind of fun and two or three business leaders in your community came in and told the students what they do, how they do it, what their path was, what's good about it, what's bad, honesty. That could create like custom mentorship programs. That could create career paths. Sometimes two people just connect and like this young person's hungry for knowledge that I have. And I've been looking to mentor somebody. And I start, maybe I'm looking for somebody eventually to take over my company and none of my kids want to, or I don't have any kids. Like that whole chain of events can start with something that simple, just putting people in the same room together. but making the place, like, if you're a distance learner, like, one thing all young men are thinking about is young women. Where am I going to meet girls? Right? Like, just that you use, I don't care if you like that incentive or not, you use the natural incentives that humans have. And girls generally want to meet young men too, right? So if you create these kind of like safe environments for that kind of interaction to happen, but you're also using it to like educate and do community outreach, it might just work. It might just work. You know, maybe we could take a look at some of the churches that are actually growing in a society where religion is actually shrinking and see what they're doing. Because they're doing stuff like this. And that's a big part. People are going to church as much for the worship as they are for the community. So follow what works, whether it's something you would personally do or not, because humans follow natural incentives. What I mean by that, if I put you in a room, but you're not locked in it, and I turn the heat up, and you don't have access to the heat, you can't turn it down, you'll leave the room. That's a natural incentive. If it's too cold, you put on a coat. If it's still too cold, you'll leave the room. Or you'll find the thermostat. You will make yourself comfortable. That's a natural incentive process. So utilize that. Harness that. Study groups. That would be a great way to create these study groups. Everybody that's in engineering or whatever discipline, Thursday evening, we're doing a study group for collaboration and you know, to figure out projects and things like that. You also want project collaboration, like spaces for team-based projects with guidance from mentors. Think about being able to go to your local business community, your local chamber of commerce, and say something they've never heard before. I'm Jack Spirico. I am the founder of Community Outreach Project, blah, 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 blah. We're utilizing the new online college platform that the government's, where all students can go for free, but they're lacking certain things. Here's what we're really looking for from this community. We're looking for business leaders who have problems they're trying to solve in their business to come in and brainstorm with our students to solve your problems. And the only thing we ask for you is to commit to showing up and show up when you're there. I'm not going to charge you anything. You're getting some of our brightest minds for free, and you're getting to interview your potentially future employees. How many people in that room when I say, if you'd like to know more, come meet me in the back of the room when we're done? How many people are going to come back there and talk to me? I know that when I was running a company, I would have ran to that motherfucker and been like, let's talk right now. In fact, I would have been pushing other people. I want in first. I want you assholes out of the way, right? Because I can hire people, but then I'm stuck with what I'm stuck with. You're talking about like the longest and most elegant interview process possible in a situation like that. And it might be kind of like, you know, sometimes a guy that's a scout for a major league team, he's looking down at a lower level. He's like watching this kid to go through college, and they're like, maybe they're ready to go, or maybe we put them in the minor league, you know, something like that, right? Like, this one's more advanced. I want to pull them in now before they're even done. Yeah, I could see that happening. Just, and then you could add some self-funding extras, right? I think that anything like this, people love coffee. They love cafes. You put a cafe in it. And it self-funds or you don't have it, right? If there's not enough demand, you don't have it, you know? You can make it low-tech. You can make it as high-end as a Starbucks. It's up to you what you do with that. You would want some sort of recreational facilities, maybe a game area, maybe some foosball tables or some shit like that. Like, I know that people want to poo-poo that, but there is an advantage. Like, I told my wife the other day, just having some recreational activity or just some physical activity, you get more done in less time. So I've started walking again every morning. I'm walking now like an hour every morning just around my property. And I'm taking that hour out of time I would normally be working, and yet I'm getting more done. Funny how that works. So I think there's a value in that. And again, that could be somewhat self-funding anyway. And maybe childcare services. Right? That's another self-funding way that people can earn a living and maybe help afford their own education. Because you don't really want like a daycare. What I'm talking about would probably only be like this. Like, Bill has a kid, and Bill's a single dad, right? And Bill has to go to his community center to work with his and collaborate. He's going to be there 4 hours, 2 days a week. That's just what Bill does. His kid would be allowed to be in that childcare facility while he's there. This is a whole different, you know, animal than dropping your kid off at daycare at 8 in the morning, pick them up at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. That's like long-term babysitting. Because if there's a problem, Bill's right there in the other room. And Bill can see what's going on with his kid. And every parent would be able to walk in there at any time they want and check on their kids. Right? Then the kids are getting exposed to this level of education at a much earlier age. Right? What do I do with my, 12-year-old who just got out of school for the day and I'm going 2 hours in the evening and I don't want to leave her home because bad shit happens when you leave 12-year-old girls at home alone. You take her with you. And you have a facility for that. So how are you going to do that with, on the current educational system we have? You're not. It's not going to happen. And then if you did it, every student expects it to be free. I say you make it affordable. You make it very affordable, and it's not like full-time childcare. Again, it's just somebody to make sure the kids don't kill each other. And maybe, I would say if this was going to be my facility, your kid shit in his pants? No. Sorry. I'm not hiring people that are expected to change diapers. Babies and old enough to go to the bathroom and be functional and understand what's going on. And if your kid's a problem, then you can't use a facility. And you have to have this all spelled out, lots of legal language on a contract that, you're not guaranteed this. This is based on certain requirements on your end as much as our end. So that would be something, you need a good lawyer to set up. I also think you'd want some administrative and support services like academic counseling, job placement assistance. You would definitely need somebody you would think of like as a community manager, basically a facility manager, knows where things are, how everything works. That person is your guaranteed one full-time employee. And you might need kind of two people because for this model to work, it's going to have to be open later, at least, if not earlier too, more like a fitness center is, right? Where you can go at 9 o'clock at night and what have you. I did a basic budget breakdown, and this is just back of the napkin calculations, but if you had 200 students paying $150 a month, that was a $30,000 budget. You could probably rent a really nice facility to do this, plus pay your utilities for somewhere between 10 and 15 grand a month. You would have staff salary somewhere between 8 to 10,000 bucks, and that's going to be 2 to 3 employees. Any additional employees would have to be like an additional services and have to be somewhat self-funding. Equipment and supplies, you're probably looking at about 2 grand up to the outside of 5 grand. And that wouldn't necessarily be recurring, right? That's prorated over your first year as you were in a startup mode. And then that number would actually go down because I don't need to buy a new computer for this computer lab every year. I only need to buy maybe upgrade them every 5 or 7 years. Workshops and events, you budget about 2 to 4 grand a month to make those fun, make those engaging, make them something people want to show up to. And miscellaneous, you throw about 2 to 4 grand in miscellaneous budget. And that math calculates. It works. And I'll just say this, would this work? This model really depends on having that kind of free online education, but I think we're going to get that. If you have that, I think so. Because again, I'm going to get a lot of the things as a college student that I'm going to miss by not going to school much cheaper. Even $200. That's $2,400 a year if you go year round. You can't buy your textbooks for 1 year of college for that. Let alone most of these 4-year universities, they require freshmen and sophomores for their own safety to live on campus, where most of the freaking date rape and over drinking and all that shit usually happens to the students that are living on campus. By the way, I'm just saying that's where the worst shit goes down. That's where the fraternities and sororities, well, if you're with us, then you can live at the frat house or whatever. All kinds of shit happens because of that stuff. And you can't buy your books for the cost of getting that kind of service because the free market will always do a better job. And someone will lean that out and be able to run a facility like that for 20 grand. And it's a profit of $10,000 a month, $120,000 a year to run that facility. You run two of them, you're retiring with a franchise model. All this can be done. Will it be done? I don't know. I do know this. This is not an unflawed program. This is me spending 30 minutes brainstorming in my head. That's all it is. It can be improved. It can be leaned out. It can be fattened out. There can be levels of this type of program. You could have a bare bones, which is kind of what mine really is with a few niceties. And you could have the Cadillac version. $500 a month version. It's still $6,000 a year. You can still barely buy your textbooks and pay for one or two courses. And you have so much more than. You can also have a tiered membership model. Like, I know that like a lot of fitness centers have things like, well, if you're only going to be here 2 days a week, your membership is this. And when you go in and you scan your membership card, if it's your third time that week, it won't let you in. There's all types of ways to make it affordable, to give people easy on-ramps. And I'm just going to say, if this was available, especially those of you that did go to college, if you could have gone to college for free and had something like this available to you, and you were picking between those two things, I'm going to go into student debt, I'm going to spend 15, 20 grand a year to go to school, I'm going to finance everything with debt, I'm going to be in this very tightly controlled funnel, or I can go over here and I have all of this other scheduling flexibility. I'm going to be able to interact with members of my community. I'm going to have the community of the students as well. I'm going to have a place to hang out. I'm going to have a place to meet people. And I'm going to be able to tailor my education to my needs. And it's going to cost me $150, $200 a month for the extra piece of it. That if I decide I don't want it, I can just stop going there and just stick to the on. Which path would you have taken? And I'm going to bet based on that, based on this right here, that the vast majority of people would have chosen this. Because one thing I can say about this, despite the fact that I know you can't do anything as quick as I put this together and not have flaws in it and not have problems. So if somebody points out those problems, I'll just concede, yes, there's probably problems there. But they're all manageable. They're all manageable. And since you're not inside a bureaucracy, you have something called flexibility. You have the ability to like respond to what your people say they want. So if everybody that's coming to this thing says, we want a full-on fitness center, we want exercise bikes, stair climbers, whatever, and you do the math and say, to do this, we need at least 50 students that will pay this much extra money, and we'll put it in. Here, sign up for it, commit to it, and we'll do it. And two people sign it, you don't do it. If 100 people sign it, you get on the phone with a contractor and say, I want this shit Tuesday, right? This is the adaptability. This is how companies actually service their customers. And when you know your customers, right, you're not some giant online conglomerate selling to retailers. You are an individual business entity that the people that do business with you are in and out your door on a daily basis. You have an opportunity to serve at a higher level and to form things that will last a lifetime, including the one thing that colleges make most of their money on and all those big giant war trust funds. Where's it all from? Alumni. So you would very likely have people coming right back to where they came up, just like they do in college, and saying, I want to invest in this. I think that this, I mean, people get successful in life, right? And this is the thing that they lie to you about. They lie to you about this. The people who are the most successful in life tend to be, not all are, but tend to be the most generous. And there's a place where people get to a certain level of success in their life and they're like, you know, when I was going through this, I wish that we would have had this other thing. And they'll come in and write you a check. That's 20 years down the road from right now, but that's where this could go. So that's my idea. And anybody wants to crap on my idea, it's fine. I have a question for you. What's your idea? How would you fix a system that is completely unrepairable? Anyway, with that, I want to remind you guys that you can always help us support the show by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. You'll find items that I really use, I've personally reviewed. If I wouldn't spend my money on it, I'm not going to sell it to you. Today's item of the day I haven't had around for quite a long time since the last time I brought this around. The Weber Kettle Grill. I mean, these things go back to way before I was born, and probably most of you as well. They're one of the best designs for a grill ever. Low-tech, simple charcoal grill. And I'm bringing it around today because, one, we're heading into Christmas and people like grills, and this is a good one. But I'm bringing it around for another reason. Many of you probably did see the video I released today on using a Weber kettle grill, and any kettle grill would work, to make biochar. And I got this idea because if you look at a kettle grill, and you look at a cone kiln, there's not much difference there, is there? And then I thought about my new design of a side saddle, is what I'm calling it, side saddle barrel kiln, where I put a pipe in the bottom and create an event where you can let air in until you get your established fire. Then you can choke it off and start making charcoal. And I said, self, guess what? There's a freaking vent at the bottom of this grill that opens all the way up and closes all the way down. That seems like it'll work. So I took all the shit out of the grill, like a little grate and everything that lets airflow underneath it. And I built a campfire in it. And I did a little bit of addition. And then I closed it and I started running it just like a cone kiln. And you know what? It didn't just work, folks. I'm going to say I have that best biochar kiln that I've recommended to you guys that ships in a flat box. You have to pop rivet it together and all. It works great. This worked probably better. It was more comfortable to run because it's nice and up high. It's designed to handle that level of heat. It's a much thicker metal. It's designed to be cooked with, right? And then I'm like, well, you know, the thing about a kiln, a biochar kiln or a charcoal kiln is a unitasker. It makes charcoal. This is a grill. It makes food. And you can make charcoal. And you could even take like your big pieces of charcoal out of your biochar batch, pitch them in a bucket, and use those to cook your next meal as your base, and then start making biochar again. Well, that's cool. I have some other ideas. If you watch my video, you'll learn. But I know what you're thinking. Jack, the one problem with this is, well, what kind of yield would you get? For those of you on the video, look at this. That's a still from the video that I put out today. The damn thing's full. Crushed down to soil particle size, that's still going to be at least a 5-gallon bucket of biochar. Go price 5 gallons of biochar. So there's a couple things that I wanted to point out with this. One, many of you already own a kettle grill, and so you own a biochar kiln. And I'm going to tell you again, this worked ridiculously good. And the ability to let airflow in when you first establish that initial fire, oh, it was beautiful. That's my biggest complaint with cone kilns, is that getting the initial burn going, having the ability to provide oxygen and then rob oxygen when you're ready. And then the thickness of a good kettle grill, that means that more of the heat is retained. It worked better than I expected it to. So you might want to check that out. And I also added to the review a couple lower cost options. Those grills like that used to be $150. Those are like the premium version, and they're now like $250. But Weber still makes basically the original kettle grill without the little fittings on the bottom, which you don't need, for like $150. But there's also some other options. Mavor has one, a company called Green. So let me look it up real quick here. Green Party makes one that's really well thought of. So all of those are under $150. And so if you want a biochar kiln and you also don't want to just have a biochar kiln, consider a kettle grill. And again, these also are, you know, just great grills altogether. And what I've added to it now is a rotisserie expander ring. So you can make a rotisserie chicken or a rotisserie roast or whatever. You use little charcoal baskets and hold the charcoal to the side or the wood coals to the side. And then you run your rotisserie. What does that do? You take the rotisserie out of the ring and you just add it about 6 inches of height, and you can make more biochar out of the same thing. And again, I'm telling you guys, man, the amount of char that you get when you run a cone kiln the right way. And if you watch my video, you know, I got a biochar course coming out soon, way more involved in how to make biochar. If you just want to know how to make char, this video will pretty much show you everything you need to know for free. So if you've been looking for a good presence for yourself or others, consider Weber Kettle Grill, and always check out tspaz.com. With that, I want to Hunter's asking about the gray market flag. You commented on the site, dude, and I responded and I put the link in, but I will add it to today's show notes for you again. So get over to the audio side after this is over, and you'll be able to get he's talking about the Agoras flag that's behind me in all my videos. Last, just remember that you can always help support the show by becoming a member of the MSB. $50 a year, guys, it's a deal. It's a deal because I never wanted to take more from somebody than they got from me. That's the truth. Like when I started the show, I had people like in my first 6 months trying to give me money, like donate. I'm not a church. I don't take donations. And when I built the MSB, what I wanted to be able to confidently say, if you use the type of things that we talk about all the time, and you probably do or you wouldn't tune into the show, and you use my discounts, you will at least get your money back. So there's no real out-of-pocket cost. And you'll probably actually make a profit. So I'm actually giving you more than I get. And if I can't do that, I don't want to be in business, because that's people. How do you run a podcast as a full-time professional for more than 16 years? That's how. You give more than you take. You give more than you take. That's what MSB is. I try to give back more than I take. That's my advice for any business. And I just want to say a few things going into the rest of this week. Again, we're going to have a rewind tomorrow on making Thanksgiving Day great with your cooking. It's an old interview with Chef Keith Snow. I'm going to have some stuff that I'm going to add to that at the beginning of it that is going to help you with dry brining as well. So I'm going to record that as soon as I'm done with this, honestly, so I can get this all done. I have my whole family coming here this year. My Thanksgiving cooking is going to start on Wednesday morning and run through to Thursday afternoon when everybody shows up. So I'm making time for myself to be able to do that. Then we're going to run the Thanksgiving Day special. And one of the things I say in that is that, and I want to say it right now because some of you won't listen to it because you've heard it before and might forget. This is not the time to air your grievances with your family. This is not the time to talk about why you hate the Orange Man or why you love the Orange Man or why you don't care about the Orange Man. This is not the time to call out your cousin who's coming to Thanksgiving who you haven't seen in 3 years about how stupid they were for thinking Kamala could win or any other bullshit. Most of the fighting around Thanksgiving actually isn't politics. They just like you to believe that. It's this one thing that Billy did to Tommy when they were kids, and Billy kept his mouth shut about it till now. And now, while he's pumped up on a bunch of wine, he's going to tell his cousin what a dumbass he is or something else like that, right? Or some slight that one family. Like, this is not the time for this shit. If you are blessed, like I'm going to be this year, to have a large portion of your family with you for Thanksgiving, it's called fucking Thanksgiving. Be thankful. Be thankful that they're with you. I don't care if you hate half of what they are. Be thankful that the other half is there too. Watch football. Talk shit about football. Don't talk shit about each other. Enjoy it. Love it. Be grateful for it, because it doesn't happen for everybody. It doesn't happen for everybody. If I had not married into a wonderful family, I would spend most of my Thanksgivings alone or maybe with friends who took pity on me. And just remember, when you're like, I really wish Cousin Bill was here. So there's somebody that wishes the shit out of the fact that their Cousin Bill was with them, because he can't get there, because they're estranged to each other, because he's overseas, right? Because he's gone. And so do not squander the wonderful thing that you get to do on this day, which is be with family often that you only see very infrequently. Make the most of it, be thankful for it, and be thankful for the things around you. With that, got stuff coming for you this week, but like I said, no new shows until next week. Run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.